All right. Here we go, everybody. Hello and welcome to the Melissa Diaz Report. My name is Melissa Diaz, coming to you live from Austin, Texas, baby. Home of cows and people who act like cows. This whole state is cows. This is it's almost like a photo negative of India, where they love cows so much, they treat their cows like their cows are extended family. Here, they love cows so much that they eat them, wear them, and act like them basically every day, every moment, everywhere you see them. They are acting and wearing and eating cows like cows. So that is that's basically Texas so far from what I can tell. And, you know, hey, look, every region of the country picks up the traits and characteristics of the geography, the local flora, the local fauna, okay? New York, lots of people that act like rats, okay? Lots of big-bosomed women that look like pigeons, okay? Lots of people that act like cockroaches. And lots of, you know, they just kind of scuttle around and hide in little corners when their surrounding environment gets too loud or dangerous and just kind of are really still, and they everyone hates them you know, instinctively maligns them. But then when you actually look into it, you realize that those people that you think are just scary and ugly and you know, are really the real victims of nature. If you look at roaches in the New York City, I grew up terrified of roaches. Terrified, okay? I thought they could just decide in your sleep to murder you, and that they would just be able to do that. They could just swarm inside your ear canal and just get in your brain and just explode your head, just eat your insides. You know, like I thought they. But then I actually watched some nature documentaries about, you know, smaller organisms, lizards, little scorpions, just all the little things in the wild, tarantulas. And I realized that the roaches are their main food. Roaches in the, you know, wild roaches are considered, I guess, just they're the cows. They're the cows of the insect lizard world. It's roaches. And so imagine something huge, bigger, way bigger than humans, being afraid of cows, right? You see cows, they're so tiny, they're like the size of your little toe, and they justly run away from you, and then you watch a nature documentary about Earth, and you realize that everything loves to eat cows, and that's roaches, but even smaller. Anyway, that was super deep. That was really deep of me to dive into right now. I'm glad you enjoyed that. As I did, or at least I hope you did. So anyway, Texans are like cows. New Yorkers are like rats. I mean, whatever, dude. What are you going to do, huh? Midwesterners, what are they like? Geckos? What do you got over there? Cheese. Midwesterners are just like blocks of cheese. Just parked around pubs, drinking beer, you know, whatever. Are they cheese? I don't know. Okay, what's the animal around there? Whatever. Like, people from Maine, right? They're just like moose. They're like moose, where, you know, the moose are, it's very quiet and kind of plodding along, going about their business. You don't fuck with them, though, because you know that something's not right. And every once in a while, people from Maine, just like moose, you'll find them staring at you through a bunch of tree trunks, just dead on, right at you in the middle, and you're alone, and you're like, what the fuck? And that's what moose do, and that's what people from Maine do. They act like that. You just start acting like the animals of where you're from, rightly so, because you're just, they are adapting to their environment, and so do humans. We do it really well. And yeah, I think that's why that ends up happening. So anyway, that's what's going on. Let's cover the news. Okay, these are the topics we're going to be covering today. First, we're going to be talking about the dating recession, why young Americans are giving up on love, according to Fox News, which, okay. Next, we're going to be briefly covering how 19th century scientific management principles birthed the stressful modern workplace. This is a 1440 investigative journalist researched article, I guess. It's just, it's a collection of articles with excerpts at the top, and that, I think that's journalism nowadays. Followed by the report from yesterday of an armed man who was shot and killed at Mar-a-Lago, apparently looking to assassinate Trump, but Trump was not at Mar-a-Lago at the time. And then finally, we're going to end with a little segment I like to call Meanwhile in Afghanistan. So that's it. That's the news. We're going to be we're going to keep the story short, you know, the number of them, and conservative, 1, 2, 3. And let's see how that goes. All right. So let's start with our first story, shall we? We have the dating recession. I guess, like, what can I say up top about that? The dating recession. You see, there is so much out there about people not being able to date, people not wanting to date, people wanting to just disappear basically into whatever sort of vice of modernity they can, which, you know, the vices have changed. It used to be like you would just kind of hang out in an opium den with a bunch of fun whores and everybody was having a good time playing music and stuff. It was so social. And I wouldn't have thought that we'd look back at the opium dens of the turn of the century with any kind of nostalgia. But here I am just doing that because those opium dens, just like any other kind of community that has to skulk around in the dark and do what they do for whatever reason, whether it's something bad or something, you know, that people think is bad, kind of like the gay clubs, right, in the mid 20th century, or I mean from forever, right, just trying to be gay and out of the way, not getting anybody's hair, just try to be gay and have a good time. But even then, the covertness, the taboo quality, it just made people want to seek each other out. There was no social media too, so they would come and find a place, a hole in the wall, I guess, like kind of like roaches, right? Roaches are just trying to find just a place to have family and community, just like everybody else. But yeah, I'm not comparing gay people in particular to roaches, by the way. It's just kind of like this is what you do when you're in that situation where people are just after you. You have to kind of, this is what, that's building your own community. And with drugs, it's easy because all you have to do is get enough people hooked on your drug and they will converge to find more of it and to commiserate with each other about the difficulties of drug finding and doing, you know? So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, the drug addicts now are kind of the last bastion of community, actually. You notice that? Everybody else has been captured by technology in various ways and kind of the social engineering of the 21st century, which, you know, they just invest so heavily in infrastructure to force people to follow certain daily routines, right? Like a lot of America is just these highways of nothing all the way to what? Always a shopping center, always a plaza, always some kind of commercial area to encourage people to spend constantly. Everything is about that here. So if you're not doing something that's consumer based, they don't want you doing it. And drugs are so powerful that they actually can pull people away from a form of living that is actually all-encompassing. It just controls you utterly. The fact that you have to use a car, the fact that the car goes on the highway, the fact that that's the law, the fact that you have to drive a certain way to a certain place to do a certain thing, leave at a certain time and go back to your place, right? Take all your things that you amassed through, and it's like they're constantly just trying to make you do that in as small a number of units of people as possible, right? Really, they just want the nuclear family to be the largest group going anywhere. And they have optimized for that to the individual person seeking things to do, because they can always make you do. The only exception is bachelorette parties, because, well, there you go. It's a drug. And but the thing is, it's a good temporary drug, alcohol, right? You kind of slam it back. You're wasted for really just the right amount of time to blow your money on a bunch of shit, right? And then pass out somewhere, and you know, after you cry on a curb with your girlfriend, like rubbing your back and going, he's an asshole, it's okay. And then you pass out, and then you wake up, right? And now you're back to the regular routine, but you spent the whole night buying shit and, you know, buying a party bus and pink cowgirl hats and stuff, matching boots, right? So it's like everything here is optimized for that. And the only thing that's managed to undermine it is drugs, like hard drugs, though. And the only thing that has managed to survive the obliteration of the human community, organic community, not mediated by any technology, is hard drugs. Hard drugs. And unfortunately, you don't have a long lifespan because of it, because they're hard. Did I mention they're hard drugs? So it's kind of, I think, in a really fatalistic way, you know, we're so nihilistic now. There's a lot of, even people, they keep trying to make it seem like we're going back to some kind of religiosity. But even if we do, it will never be the same, unless, and this is the caveat, they manage to make people so fucking ignorant that they don't know any better than to believe in God. If they manage to really blast us back to the fucking Stone Age, to where we have lost all connection to the history of literature, history itself, right? But the literary history is the most important one, because that's the history of thought and cognitive, you know, narrative, right? Interfacing with people one-on-one about, like, where are we now and where are we going and where do you want to be and where should we be, right? So, but they have managed to do that. Like, people are kind of getting pretty illiterate at this point, but they're not all the way there. And so because of that, people still will not go towards any kind of real religion. They'll be able to go. I mean, there's going to be something that is like religion always, because I think it's just part of our, you know, psychological DNA, if that's even a term, but probably not. But you know what I mean? But you know what I mean. And they can do that. But until then, we're now faced with this nihilistic choice where it's like you can either live a long, healthy, whatever that means right now, life, just kind of futzing around, you know, getting pumped of productivity and consumer impulse and stuff, like kind of just getting poked and prodded and given a stick and a carrot to kind of keep you going like a donkey on this wheel, right, of capitalism, right? And not to say I don't dislike capitalism. I'm just saying, like, this is kind of what it's like here right now. It's what it feels like. And you could just choose that, and you just go, you know, like old school donkeys pumping water. They would have to put them on a stone wheel, and then you would just walk around and around and around and around, and you're munching and munching and munching until you just fucking drop dead one day. And then they sweep you over to the glue factory, and then they put a new donkey in your place. That's how it is. You can do that, and that's not terrible. You have a nice bed of straw to turn into at night. Maybe they'll hook you up with another, like, a little donkey action to make more donkeys. Maybe they'll trim your hooves and treat you nice, take you up for a walk, maybe. And then, you know, you live a relatively nice life otherwise, other than the brain cell-killing activity that you have to engage in every day in exchange for that. And but there's plenty of ways to, you know, unwind from that, and all plenty of bachelorette parties in your future is what I'm saying. And then you're just dead. And that's your life. That was your life. That was your life. Or you can throw it all away. You can throw it all away and just put your life in the hands of the wind. You know, like that Nina Simone song, right? Wild is the wind. And you do, and you do whatever. They're like, have some coke. You're like, yes. It's like, here, have some chlamydia. You're like, oh, yeah, right? Here, smoke some fucking opium. You're like, yes. And then you meet other people in the wind. And they're like, isn't it great? We're free from all, from the being a donkey. And we're in the wind together. And you're just like, yes, and right. And that's basically, I don't know, was that like the boomer generation? That's why the ones, that's why people hate boomers now, because all the fun ones died. They died of fun. That's what happened to the boomers. And the only ones left over were the people who were never fun enough to really engage in that, right? Who were never free enough or wild enough or like just like, courageous enough even to just, you know, be adamant about peace, right? And tuning out and love and beauty and poetry. And all those people died. They're gone. And the ones that survived became like shells of that era, just bitter, resentful husks, because they were the people that got burned in that whole thing. Because while people were having fun, you know, people get hurt when you have fun. Look at any playground, right? I don't care how soft you make the playgrounds now, right? Kids' elbows and knees are still pretty fucking sharp. And their mouths, too. They talk, they are bullies, children. They are terrible people. So, you know, that's just what happens. And that's why you don't like boomers now. Because they're the ones that were left over. They're the dregs of boomer society, you know? And the ones that got left over, they suck. They suck. And I freely admit that. But at the same time, the ones that died, I mean, they had quite a time. And so the problem is, though, that the drugs were much, much better. And the choice of drugs, really. Now you have these designer drugs, and you have fentanyl, and you have crystal meth. And they'll get you there, but you're not going to like it, right? It's just, they just make you schizophrenic. Right, and so you go from wild as the wind to, you know, holy shit, my fucking leg fell off sometime over the last 5 years, and I didn't even notice. That's what's happening with the new drugs. So they've even kind of fucked that up for everybody, and that's unfortunate. But you can always turn to the good ones, right? The good ones now is heroin. That's the sad part, is that the good healthy drug now is to just do heroin. Just do some heroin. Don't do heroin. Anyway, I'm not advocating for the use of heroin. And also, like, weed doesn't do that. Weed makes you more egotistical. That's, I think, you know, and you can tell because they've done studies on this. People with narcissism should not do weed because it inflates your ego, because it kind of mutes the world and enhances your cognitive experience, right? And, you could say that shrooms do that too, but shrooms increase empathy. I've looked this up one time last week. I asked ChatGPT, and increases empathy, and you know, and releases oxytocin and stuff. And that's kind of the similar experience that you have to taking care of a baby. So that's why when people take care of babies for long periods of time, they release oxytocin. They feel better. They have less anxiety, and that's something to think about. If you have anxiety, maybe you don't need Lexapro. Is that an anxiety drug? I don't know. Whatever the anti-anxiety drug of choice is, you might want to consider having a baby. And you know what? If you have a baby, it's better because you won't have that weird anti-anxiety medication stare that I don't think they realize they have. You can almost always tell when somebody's on some anti-anxiety shit because they stare just a little bit too long, because I think my theory is that the lack of anxiety goes maybe a little too far, and then it actually prevents them from, you know, having the right timing for social cues, like when and how long to stare at somebody. without blinking, you know? So, yeah, this is a very, and this is a good caveat to this article, right? So here we go. Welcome to the dating recession. Why young Americans are giving up on love. This is FoxNews.com. So the caveat, obviously, this is FoxNews.com. And since it's FoxNews.com, you know that they have, I guess, pronatalist, if you want to do on extremely online speak, right? They're pro-babies and they're pro-marriage, traditional marriage. So they're always going to have some doom and gloom, apocalyptic shit about dating and where it's going and why it's not good. But in my personal experience, you know, producing comedy shows and all this stuff and performing and interacting with audience members, even though that's a particular kind of person that goes to a comedy show, I'll give you that. People seem a little awkward, a little more. I don't know if they seem more awkward if I'm just not 20 anymore. So, you know, I think what I think it is that, here's what I think it is. I think it might actually be because of the lack of good music, or I don't know if you call it maybe lack of good music, but the lack of music that is universal, that nobody hates because it's so good that it makes your head move, it makes your booty shake, it makes your feet tap, it makes your hands clap, and because of that, everybody loves it, because it's important for 20-year-olds in particular if they're going to date, because 20-year-olds are too stupid to have mature, fully formed opinions. Ask anybody who's not 20, you'll see. And trust me, I know if you're 20, you might feel mad. You might be an exception, all right? You might have grown up in a situation that made you mature, you know, well beyond your years ahead of time. Maybe you grew up in a fucking coal mine and you saw people dropping like flies from black lung every day. I don't know, okay? Maybe your mom was a trucker. She just threw you in the back of the truck and drove across the whole country with you, and you saw things that you shouldn't have seen, like truck stop lizards or whatever. What do you call them? Gas station lizards. What are the prostitutes? Whatever. You know, like, you just see things. See guys doing things and gas stations, right? Whatever. You might be the exception. But for the most part, you know, 20-year-olds, they don't have it yet. And I remember being 20. And what you do is, you know, tweens, like teenage to early teen, 20s, tweens, what you do is you take music that's written by people who think about human connection, right? And big things. And they distill it down into these lyrics. And as a 20-year-old, you take the lyrics and you incorporate that as almost like a prosthetic for your personality, because it resonates with you, right? It's already kind of in the direction of where you're going, in the vein of probably who you're going to end up being. And so you take those music lyrics and then you spit them out at other 20-year-olds. And then they spit out the lyrics of their songs. And the thing is, it's like when the music is amazing, like it was for so many decades, then it, you know, it connects. You connect with the same song, and you know that you are both resonating with this poetry. Nowadays, the music landscape is so fragmented. There's so much AI slop. There is so much of artists who are kind of more like corporate created creatures than organically grown artists that grew up in some fucking corner somewhere, you know, that played, you know, like Bette Midler, she played piano and sang at gay bathhouses, I think it was, and clubs for a long time, and developed her voice there and her songwriting. And so, you know, when she burst out with everything she had, right, it was like an organic place. It was from realness. Now it's artificial. Every fucking artist now, the big ones, right? They are, not that they're not talented, right? But they are handled and shaped, molded to be optimized, and that doesn't sound fun, does it? So they're great to go and watch at concerts, right? Like Taylor Swift and Beyonce, those are kind, and Cardi B, right? They're great. They're talented people. They work hard. Okay, I'm not saying that they're not something, you know? But it's hard to connect with that because that's pop music, right? So there's nothing deeper than that. And so, I mean, I guess you don't need it because you're in your 20s, but not everybody, like, because they're also kind of gender specific, right? Like Taylor Swift is for the Swifties. Swifties tend to be girls and maybe some gays and stuff, right? But guys are not going to be into this. It's hard to connect now, right? They're optimizing so well with people, right? This is back to what I was talking about before with consumerism, right? They're optimizing so well that it's actually, you know, like to really surround each individual person with a specific lifestyle suite of consumer products and services, that it's actually like all that padding is actually dividing people and isolating them. And that's not a turn on. Okay. You can't get turned on by that when everyone seems like such a stranger, when the whole world is just kind of optimized for you through your phone and through highways and shit. Anyway, all right, I'm getting way too deep in the weeds with this shit. Let's move on, okay? But anyway, the dating recession, right? This is what's going on here. So young Americans giving up on love. And look at these numbers, man. 5,275 singles finds three quarters of women and two thirds of men barely dated in the past year. That's pretty awful. That's pretty bad. But it's also due to all this other stuff. You know, people don't drink as much anymore. When you drink, you get that liquid courage. And also people, I don't know. I think it might just be the drinking, really. But yeah, I don't know. Let's see what they're saying. Let's see what's going on here. So not a single date last year. So what's throwing cold water on what's supposed to be the most sexually charged phase of adult life? Well, porn probably, but okay. It's one of the most significant barriers to dating is an epidemic loss of self-confidence among young adults. Only about 1 in 3 said they felt comfortable approaching someone they were interested in, and less than 40% said they felt confident in their ability to talk about their feelings with a dating partner. Oh, I understand. I understand this. I get what's going on here. I understand. Look, this is what I was talking about with playgrounds. This is what I was talking about with, you know, how things have changed, but shit is the same, right? Like, it's just like a playground, but now you're adults, right? They've made playgrounds super soft now. You don't really get the same amount of injuries as you did in those metal monkey bars and the fucking hot asphalt and all that shit. The things that still can hurt you are the kids, the other kids. They can hit you, they can kick you, you can fall into an elbow or a knee by mistake even, or people could bully you and make fun of you, like people, you know, they could just be assholes to you. And so that's what's happened to us as adults, right? It's like the environment is softer now, right? You don't have to deal with the same shit that you used to in a way, as long as you can sidestep fentanyl addicts in the downtown area of your particular city or situation, you're okay. It's not terrible. You know, it's stressful. You got to pay rent and shit, but you're okay. You can watch Netflix and stuff. But the problem is that then the most likely thing to hurt you becomes the other people that you interact with, and so you start to build this anxiety about it, and then you start to take Lexapro. And then you get that weird stare, and then nobody wants to bang you. You see what I'm saying? You gotta get off the high horse of not wanting to be hurt, right? That's the thing. And I think it's just a cultural thing. People have just developed an expectation that they shouldn't have to get hurt to do something. Like, getting hurt needs to be removed from the process of, you know, some kind of interpersonal thing. And that's just not how shit works, right? Look at the druggies. If you want to know how to find love, you gotta pursue it the same way someone does crystal meth, okay? You gotta get up in the morning, you gotta go, I choose love, the way they go, I choose crack. And you gotta get up, you gotta be a fucking drug addict for love. You have to love, you like to love chasing love, love having love, love loving and love being loved, right? It has to be all, you have to be like a drug addict. You got to go and actually, you got to go observe the drug addicts. They're sitting around, they're looking at life go by, all this fucking productivity bullshit, Excel spreadsheet bullshit, dressing nice to go job interview, blah, 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 you know, eating right, blah, blah, right? They're like, fuck that. I want heroin. And that's how you have to be with love. And drug addicts get hurt in the pursuit of their drug a lot by everyone. Just that everyone's trying to step on them and sweep them out of the way, get rid of them, ignore them, hurt them actively. They just keep coming. They fucking keep coming at the drug. They like a horde. They don't care because it feels good and it makes life this microcosm of this epic journey. Every day for them is Lord of the Rings. Do you understand? Every day they gotta fucking punch golems out of the way so they could get the ring to Mordor and get off. You know what I mean? Like every day, society is their Sauron, right? It's people watching them and filming them on your phone. That's the eye, you know, just watching, and they're just trying to make themselves small and scheme to get drugs. You gotta be like that if you want love. You gotta get to the point where you are willing to just fucking run at any opportunity to love somebody. That's what you got to do. You got to not give a shit about how it's going to hurt or anything, because that's the best. Love is better than drugs. Love is better than drugs. So you got to go like a crystal meth addict towards it, right? Everybody that does drugs, they're doing it because they want love that they never got. That's why, for whatever reason, right? Sometimes it starts with a shitty childhood. Sometimes it starts with a mental illness. One way or another, they did not receive the support and love, you know, like that kind of love where you get chased. Somebody fucking chases you down and fucking makes you get sober. Like, they fucking get you. You know what I mean? They're like relentless, because that's love. That's a parent who loves. And when you want that kind of love, you don't give a shit about being hurt. And so you got to ask yourself, what do you actually want, right? I think 2/3 of women, and what are the numbers here? Let's see. The numbers are 3/4 of women, 2/3 of men. I mean, it's just a lot of people. You're looking for, I don't think you're actually looking for love. That might be the issue, right? Think about what you're looking for that makes you think it's not even worth talking or approaching the people that you claim you want to get through in search of some of your person or people, if you're poly, I guess, right? Think about it, because maybe you don't actually want love, or maybe, you know what I mean? And maybe you want something else. And maybe once you get that thing, you'll be able to talk to people more easily, because then you'll realize that you have the thing you actually wanted. Now you can go find some love, somebody to share it with, right? So I think that might be kind of the main issue. And also, it's like 20-year-olds. So who cares? Okay, I care, right? So it's, let's see what else. Boop, boop, boop. Of course, they're going to blame social media. Yeah. This hints at a bigger cause. Kids aren't just avoiding dates, they aren't socializing at all. Last year, the Institute for Family Studies found that the average time young adults spent in person with friends in a given week has fallen by 50% since 2010. Other research has found that American adults are spending more time alone today, even post-pandemic, than ever before. American teens spend an average of nearly 4 hours a day on social media, and even longer on their smartphones generally. Is it any wonder that kids buried in a virtual world don't know how to make eye contact? Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Smartphone use. Yeah, sure, it's smartphone use. Yeah. Yeah, sure, it's smartphone use. Probably. But that's drugs. So there you go. Maybe what's happening is that phones are the new drug, are the real new drug, crystal meth and all that shit, that's just other shit that's happening. And so kids are actually on drugs. And so when you're on drugs, drugs are your substitute for love. I don't fucking know. Did I solve everything right now? I think I did. I think I solved it, baby. Anyway, let's move on. Let's see. Yes. Oh, and I guess this is another thing that's happening, right? Armed man is shot and killed at Mar-a-Lago, Palm Beach sheriff says. This is according to a report by NPR. And essentially, it's saying U.S. Secret Service officials said an armed man was shot and killed after he entered President Trump's private club, Mar-a-Lago, in Palm Beach, Florida, early Sunday morning. The FBI later identified the man as a 21-year-old Austin Tucker Martin of Moore County, North Carolina. North Carolina, they got good ribs over there. Their food's pretty good. I don't know. I think I might specifically be thinking of Asheville, though, because that's the only place I've been. You are, yeah, thanks, NPR. I'll give you money later, okay? Come on, I'm busy right now. All right, Trump was in Washington at the time. Okay, Palm Beach County Sheriff Rick Bradshaw told reporters the man, who was later identified as Martin, made it to the inner perimeter of Mar-a-Lago with a shotgun and a gas can before agents stopped him. He was ordered to drop those two pieces of equipment that he had with him, Bradshaw said, at which time he put down the gas can, raised the shotgun to a shooting position. Oh, well, I mean, what else was going to happen? The guy was pretty young, though, right? This guy was 20s. Okay, look, hey, look, I'm willing to, he's 21, 21-year-old Austin Tucker Moore. Austin Tucker Moore, what are you doing, Austin Tucker Moore? Here's a report by Associated Press. Let's see if they have any updates. Investigators have not identified a motive. However, Trump has faced threats to his life before, including two assassination attempts during the 2024 campaign. In fact, actually, has there been a president that's had more assassination attempts than this guy? And haven't they mostly been 20-year-olds? I mean, what if what's happening is that kids are just too busy plotting presidential assassinations. And so they don't have time for dating. Maybe that's what's going on, is that people are too busy trying to figure out how to assassinate the president. At least men are, right? And you don't really have time for love when you're practicing an assassination attempt. I mean, you don't want anyone to fall in love with you. You want to kill the president. You're probably not going to survive. So you're probably just doing them a favor by not connecting with anyone because you're busy. You're busy. Yeah, they're on their phones and you could blame the phones, but really they're on their phones looking up how to get the right gun, looking up how to get a scope, action rifle, looking up, you know, like the blue, you know, trying to figure out the blueprint for, you know, Mar-a-Lago, where's the access of entry, where to go, you know, the schedule of the Secret Service agents. You know what I mean? Like, that's just a busy time in a young man's life when you're practicing a presidential assassination. You can't date people. And if these numbers are right, it seems like about 70% of men are practicing how to assassinate the president. So I guess you can see why kids aren't dating right now. They're kind of busy. I think, and also, honestly, to be less facetious, the thing is that that's really what your phone's doing. Your phone, whenever you stare at it, is like giving you your little narrative about your life that makes it epic. Kind of like how a crystal meth addict does with crystal meth. They don't need any phone, though, because their crystal meth does it for them. It just shrinks your brain down to the size of a pea, and all you can think about is drugs and how to get it. So every day is just that. It's pretty simple, but your phone is more complex, and it's built to deal with people with no real addiction, like quote unquote normal people. So really it has to build an elaborate fake epic life for you so that you stay glued to the phone and make all choices that are based on that epic narrative of you self-actualizing and whatever. And it's like, you know, and the problem is that sometimes that algorithm can make a mega narrative about how you should kill the president of the United States. That's just what happens. People say that people get radicalized online, but the thing is that it'll give you whatever you put in, and then inflate it to epic proportions, right? So you'll start off not liking Trump, and you get what they call it, what is it, Trump derangement syndrome or whatever, right? But you already came in with that, and then your phone will feed into that and give you, it's like, oh, you think that's, yeah. Yeah, Trump sucks. Capitalism sucks. The Chinese Communist Party is cool, actually. And you should kill the president, right? And because that's the only direction you can go in from there. You know, if your everyday interaction on your phone is how much you hate Trump, I mean, the only solution is to kill him, right? So, because you can't just... He's already been elected twice, right? He won't be elected again, knock on wood. And, you know, so the only other option to win is to murder him, actually. So, you know, I think 20-year-old guys, they're susceptible to, they love epic shit. Women get epic, but it's about, like, internal shit. So women get engrossed into, like, you know, how to become, like, women are just becoming something, right? You know, fashionista, right? It's very, very internalized, right? But guys look for shit out to affect outwards. And so assassination is just one of those things. You can blame the phone in the sense that the tool just has no guardrails and just will do whatever you want it to do. It will make an epic story for you in whatever direction you want that to be. And so I think people have just found themselves in weird corners of the internet as a result, because you can start with, I like dogs, and end with, I am a furry. And then you can start with, you know, I want to make big political change and I hate Trump. And then you'll end up wanting to kill Trump, right? Or I hate capitalism and you'll end up trying to bomb a fucking electric grid somewhere. So... yeah, I think, yeah, okay, you could. I think you should definitely blame phones, but phones, you can only blame them so much. They're a tool, but they're, well, actually, the problem with phones is that we're the tool. And what happens when a tool is automated, you know, but the tool is unpredictable. It's an we're an unpredictable tool, and they're trying to use us as tools through our phones to be certain ways in society, to basically just buy and do and go where they want us to go, right? And this is just commerce and marketing. And the problem is that there's a person offering a service in whatever the fuck it is. So it's even in hardcore shit, hardcore porn, murder, like whatever you're into, it's out there. And it'll just get fed to you. So that's why they're trying to, you know, crack down and censor it, because they want to keep controlling us, but they want to, you know, eliminate certain pathways, I think is really what's going on. And now they got to deal with, you know, a low fertility rate and shit and all this stuff and people committing presidential assassinations. So anyway, we're going to end with a segment I like to call Meanwhile in Afghanistan. Essentially, the Taliban has a new penal code which legalizes domestic violence against women. And essentially, the Taliban, the government has... enacted a penal code that allows husbands to physically punish their wives and children as long as it doesn't cause broken bones or open wounds, which is how good of them. How good of them to do that? I mean, that, you know, really, in a really low-key way, I mean, that's kind of the rule in every shitty neighborhood, every, like, trashy, shitty, sketchy area of the world. The unspoken rule is you can hit your wife and kids as long as there's no broken bones or open wounds. That's kind of where everybody draws the line. Like, you could slap her around, you can call her names, or you can make her cry. And but people do draw the line in the shittiest areas with, you know, like, too much abuse. Like, the Bronx is like that for sure. because I guess people think it's like, well, you know, she should leave. And so if she doesn't, that's like on her sort of. And I don't want to get involved. And it's a combination of those factors. So I like how every once in a while they'll share stuff about Afghanistan, because I think that's just another, you know, that's just, they know that that's a way for people to unwind, right? You kind of read about the Taliban and what they're doing, and it makes you breathe a sigh of relief that you don't live there. So, you know, even that's doing its part. So, yes, let's see what else is going on. It's the UK-based, this code has adopted a discriminatory framework regarding violence against women. Yeah, no shit. Specifically, Article 32 restricts criminal liability to instances where a husband beats the woman with a stick, and this act results in severe injury such as a wound or bodily bruising. Even in such cases, women bear the burden of proof before the judge, and the resulting penalty is a 15-day imprisonment. Can you imagine taking your husband to court for beating the shit out of you, and you gotta prove that it happened? And even if you do, he's only in jail for 15 days. 15 days, dude? What are you going to do in those 15 days? He's going to come out 15 days. He would have spent 2 weeks doing, working out, push-ups, lifting weights, just getting ready to absolutely own you when he gets out of there. 15 days gives you 2 weeks to pack up your shit, get the kids, and go home if you can. Or just straight up, like, go to the mountains or something. They got a lot of mountains over there, right? But then what are you going to do? Just live in the mountains? You don't know how to live in the mountains. You're just some chick with her kids. Kids are really hard to take care of. But that would be your only option. I mean, you put him in jail for 15 days, and those 15 days, you get the fuck out of Dodge. You know what I mean? Like, you got to get out of Dodge. So, this is fun. And, that's something to think about, because I'm sure dating in Afghanistan, I'm sure there's 100% success rate, because it's just a guy going to the parents of some lady and going, hey, I have a cow. Can I have your daughter? And they're like, yes, we thought you'd never ask. Give me the cow or goat or whatever they have. And then, you know, you take her and she's yours. So it's something to think about in this day and age. Maybe Hinge is not the worst thing. Maybe... what's the one where Bumble, right, where women choose? Maybe that's not the worst thing happening to you. So, yeah. Anyway, I think that's all the time that I have for today. Thank you for tuning in to the Melissa Diaz Report. My name is Melissa Diaz. This is the Melissa Diaz Report. Thank you so much for listening. I really appreciate it. Stay tuned next Monday when I'm back with more rants, and we'll have some more fun. So, yeah. Bye-bye. See you later.